Welcome in, wrong side of the pond. He is DJ Schweitzer. I am Jeremy Lance. And DJ, we have a third mic tonight, a third person joining us. I say mic, though. We don't use microphones on this podcast. One of many criticisms we have.
To be fair, we used to use mics for a little while.
We did, didn't we?
Yeah, and they were actually the person who is third mic tonight, who let us borrow those microphones. And it's actually your one-time stand-in back when you were closer to death, not caused by this pandemic. Yeah, it was twice that he actually stood in, but was your one-time fill-in in that regard. And it's former standing co-host Adam Maloney joining us on the line tonight. How you been, Adam?
Pretty good. Glad to be here. Jeremy, glad you made it through.
Yeah, you enjoying your quarantine?
Yeah, as much as I can.
It's hard to.
It is quite hard. We thought we'd bring Adam in, not because Jeremy is once again close to death, at least that we're aware of. He appears COVID-free, at least on tonight's stream. This is our ninth pandemic special. We brought Adam on because we're going to dip our toes into an area of the game that he's very familiar with. And that's the back end of the pitch, the goalkeepers. We've been doing all these top 10 lists, and one of the things we've really not done yet is like position by position. And I don't know that we're actually going to get that detailed about this yet. But who knows? We might need to fill content time, depending on how
you
long.
You know what? I think originally we were like, oh, we just need to come up with eight podcasts to do before things get back going. We're going to need several more. This is actually, I believe, number 9 anyways.
Yeah.
Of an unforeseeable amount. So
if there's 11 to go, we might be working our way through the rest of the pitch, but we're going to start with goalkeepers. And Adam seemed the perfect person to bring back on to make us with our amateur goalkeeper opinions, seem, you know, very amateurish as they should be, because Adam himself is a goalkeeper, or was, depending on how you want to phrase it. Right, Adam?
Mainly was.
I don't know. I've seen some pretty hot videos that you posted during this very pandemic where you're showing that you still got the goods in your backyard. You got your whole family working you out, so that way you keep those reactions sharp.
Yeah, I replied to one guy that said, looks like he still got it. And I said, if there's one save to be made, I'll make it. But if there's two saves to be made, I'm making one save.
Yeah, that's true. I get that. It's a lot harder to get up these days.
Mm-hmm.
So before we get into that, we're going to do the thing that we normally do. We don't necessarily need to say, hey, what have you been up to? Because we all have been doing the same thing, and that's
nothing.
Yeah, nothing. But what we thought we'd tiptoe our way through the few storylines that permeate the sport at this time. And the ongoing ones are the ones we've been hitting every single week. And when are we going to actually see football again? And at least in some places, we're actually seeing it again, and that someplace is Korea. I don't know if any of you guys have tuned in or been checking out Korean football now that it's started.
No, I'm more of a Korean baseball guy. Big KBO fan.
You've been enjoying that?
I have. It's on ESPN. I can find it easily. I asked you before we started the show how you were finding the Korean soccer league, and you mentioned my least favorite site in the world, Reddit. The comment section of the internet.
Yeah, that's right. There's good things to find there if you're willing to, you know, wade through all the muck.
Yeah, my DVR can't find Reddit stuff, so it doesn't really do me help. But you've been watching it? Is it any good?
I mean,
is it weird? It
depends on your definition of good. It's an empty stadium with a bunch of players I've never really watched before. The one match that I actually watched, you'd mentioned this before, it was on Twitter, actually involved a former Middlesbrough striker, Lee Dong-guk. I don't know if you guys remember him at all.
Oh, yeah.
At all.
Yeah.
41 years old. He's actually the all-time leading scorer in the K-League, and he scored the winner in a match that was broadcast into 36 different countries, just to show you the thirst for how many people are actually trying to watch the sport right now. So I wasn't the only one watching Korean football, that's for sure.
We need something. Fox was playing something Saturday morning. I don't even know what it was. It was like the second leg of some like South American tournament. I'm not even sure what happened. I don't even know where the two teams were from. It was clearly like a newer thing because there was nobody in the stands, but I watched every bit of it.
No, that could have just been a normal South American game, I think.
That's true.
I think their fans were banned.
Yeah.
Quite possibly. They'd
probably like thrown acid on the opposing fans the match before or something along those lines.
On fire. I've seen that one.
Yeah, I've watched a lot of really random games of late. I feel like people are DMing stuff around like, oh, man, have you seen this stream? And I catch myself watching like a Copa America game from like 1984 that looks like it's on VHS or maybe even Betamax or whatever people were actually watching things on back then. But I watched some really random soccer games because I'm thirsting for it. So, of course, when the Korean games popped on, I was definitely going to do it. But I'm excited this weekend. It sounds like we're actually going to get German football. I don't know about you guys, but I'm definitely tuning in. Dortmund's hosting Schalke in a Revier Derby right off the bat to get things started. Obviously, no fans, but I'm like intrigued to see what soccer, like kind of like the mecca for soccer culture kind of right now in Germany, what it's going to be like without all that. So I don't know if anyone's else is kind of excited or intrigued about it.
I'm definitely excited for it. I think it's one of the best things about watching German football is they do tend to have some of the like best atmospheres as far as the stadium goes. So watching it, the Bundesliga without one of its best, attractions about it. I don't know. It'll be interesting. It'll be weird. I mean, you're talking about a pretty good rivalry we're going to get with Schalke and Dortmund, and it's just going to be kind of in a, you know, training pitch style environment of, you know, you can hear everybody talking to each other on the pitch and, you know, the faint clapping in the background of some guy standing somewhere.
I know in Korea they piped in supporter noise into the stadium.
Oh, yeah, they did. They were doing that in the baseball league there, too. That's like, I guess, their thing is they pipe in the noise.
Was that where they had cardboard cutouts that you could buy and have them print cut out of yourself to sit in a seat?
Yeah, someone's doing that in Germany for sure. Adam, if they're not going to pipe in crowd noise, what would you pick for the soundtrack selection that were, if you could, while you were playing a match?
While I was I don't know, probably some Fish. You could just get like one long jam, that would be the whole half, like an entire half.
I mean, TV, it's German wise, though, right? So like it should just be like Du Hast by Rammstein just for like 90 minutes.
TV wise, it's interesting. I can get past the no crowd noise, and I think like hearing players and coaches talk is interesting on TV, and I don't think the players are going to have a problem, because I mean training matches can be as intense as real matches, so I mean I don't think there's an issue there. But yeah, it's going to be weird watching it on television a little bit.
It's going to be like all of those crap soccer movies from the 80s. I was talking about it on Twitter with someone that I know we all converse with, Browntown, on Twitter, about this Hot Shot, and like all the crowd shots are like clearly from a game that's probably not even soccer. And then all the shots of the game action are like downward angled so that they're pointed at the field and you can't actually see the stands at all. If they're not just like, you know, shot from the knee down. Like most,
so it was like Highbury.
Yeah, pretty much. Or Spurs, old ground, obviously, as well, right? Hart Lane. So, but no, it's definitely going to be a unique experience. I'm looking forward to the Bundesliga, for however long it might be back. I'm a little skeptical given that there's already been teams in Germany, England, and Spain who've had players come back and test positive for the virus. I don't really understand how that's going to play out in the longer run. Or are we going to see leagues shut down and cancel? But we saw.
You know, I, I think it would be hard to. I think what you're going to see, and this is where you're going to have teams starting to freak out on the powers that be, is you're going to have basically someone's going to test positive and the league's just going to be like, well, yeah, go tell that player to go self-quarantine and you got to continue on with one less guy. Because once they get something rolling like this, the thought of stopping it is going to probably be not even from a logistical thing, but just from like, hey, we're doing this to save whatever money we can. Ownership's not going to want to pull the plug once it gets going.
Do you think they actually shut it down if someone dies? Like, is that what it's going to take? Is like someone
dies? Would be like, you're talking like a player dies, a staff member, a staff personnel dies.
Yeah. One of the, you know, paramedics that has to come work at the stadium because you have to have one by law there, you know, something along those lines. Is it going to take
Yeah, no, I mean, I guess that would probably make them have to, but I'm pretty sure they're going to go until that happens. It's not a great thing, but it is a thing, and I think it's probably what they're going to do.
One of the things we mentioned before the hour was, or before we started recording, was that England have said pro sports can return on June 1st. Would obviously give the Premier League the go-ahead, at least by legal matters, the go-ahead. Do we, Adam, well, I'll start with you. Do you feel like we're actually going to be seeing Premier League football on or around June 1st?
No, I don't. We talked about it a little bit before, but it seems like players in England, like what – Sterling and Danny Rose specifically today,
yeah,
are completely against it. And it sort of seems like culture wise there, the players kind of hold more power than they might in other countries, given other leagues. Like it just seems like that's more of a players league than other leagues around Europe and around the world. And I think if the players don't want to do it in England, I think they, more than anywhere, kind of have the power to say, no, we're not going to do it.
Yeah, well, let's not forget, too, that the owners right now can't even decide on the format that they would want to do that in.
Yeah, there's not even a plan in place.
Yeah, six.
Yeah, I mean, people are talking about the June 1st, but it's like they seem to be in, like, nowhere near close, even from a logistical standpoint, of starting. Like, where are they playing at? They keep talking about neutral sites. What neutral sites? How many neutral sites? How is transportation and lodging going to go for that?
Yeah, it's not just the neutral sites. Should there be relegation? I mean, there are just loads of things that no one can agree upon at this point. Who knows if we'll even get to see next season kick off when it's planned to.
I mean, the FA basically came out, I think it was today or over the weekend, basically saying like we're promoting and relegating either if we play games or we don't play games. Movement will happen like it normally would based on, you know, on field merit. So if we don't play, it's based off of where the table is at this moment. That's how things are going to go. And you have 6 to 10 sides kind of near the bottom, basically fighting that whole situation, because, you know, obviously they all want to stay up, and it's either going to be they don't play and the three teams at the bottom are already screwed and it's done, or they play in a very different format that wasn't the format that the league is supposed to be played in, and they're going to feel the people that get relegated are going to feel totally slighted. You'll probably get lawsuits out of it. It'll be a mess.
Adam, where would you want things to end up? Do you want the season to end now? As a United fan, I feel like you would probably take right now.
Yeah, sure. I'm fine with that. Just void it. You can promote and relegate, but just don't hand out the trophy.
I feel like we can all commend that decision on this podcast.
But like,
it would be funny.
Even at this point, like, regardless of what they do, this win for Liverpool against, I mean, it's not their fault, but like, there's going to be an asterisk on it, whether they get it or they don't. Like, there's going to be a giant asterisk on this season.
Oh, this is what Sammy Sosa looks like playing for Liverpool. One other bit of news that's kind of transpired of late. We don't quite know when we're going to see MLS again, but we do know that Major League Soccer has asked the players' union to take a 20% wage cut across the board. This is kind of different than earlier proposals where we're going to see a bunch of players who make under $100,000 not really see their salaries touched at all. And then the bigger players seeing much larger cuts, some of them as much as 75%. Obviously, the rich players push back, and now that's been put into a 20% across the board type of position. I don't know. I'd love to object to this in some capacity because you hate to see the players not getting the money that they've been promised, but it kind of seems like a reality at this point.
Yeah.
And 20%,
We're all taking cuts.
Someone were like, hey, you're only going to see 20% of your salary cut for this year. I'd be like, deal. Like, I'd take that deal right now.
Yeah.
But I'm also
I guess positive on the MLS side is like players have at most teams have had their players report to back to training to do kind of individual isolated training at the facility. They were kind of barred by the league from going to the facility during the initial lockdown. That's now been lifted. So dudes are showing back up. We'll see how long, but they're there.
There was finally some fresh social media content this week. That was pretty much the only thing I saw worthwhile out of that. Anything else going on in the world of soccer? I don't feel like anything else.
One quick note on Premier League. So even if they play the games or get something done, they're already standing to lose £300 million for not fulfilling the TV contracts they have.
Mm.
So I mean the whole like we gotta salvage this, you know, the money, like we're already halfway down the road as far as that. Like that $300 million of it already is not going to be salvaged.
It's like 1.5 Neymars.
Yeah. And the tough thing about this is like the economics are going to just continue to be more of an issue and more of a pressing need to do something. Even if it's maybe not from a health standpoint, the best idea.
Yeah. And that does get tricky because you want everybody to be healthy and make the best choice for the most possible people to remain healthy. But, to pretend like it's not an issue or shouldn't be a consideration, I don't think is wise.
Yeah.
Well, we'll let everyone argue that infinitum for pretty much the rest of eternity. I think this will be the conversation we'll all be talking about for the next 30 years, unfortunately. But that is what it is. One more thing before we get over into our top 10 list with goalkeepers this week. And finally, let Adam do some significant talking on this episode. 2 weeks ago, we hit on our favorite games we'd ever had to watch, and we allowed everyone to write in. Two of you wrote in, poor participation, but we understand why, because we were supposed to read these last week, and we didn't do that because we literally ran out of time. So we're going to squeeze in these two. They came from Matt Morris and our good buddy Roop. As well. Let's start with Matt's. He had some really good ones in here. He said these weren't ranked. He just gave us a couple of them. Crew versus New York City FC 4-1 in the 2017 playoffs. I thought that was a really good one as well. May 10th, 2016 final match at the Boiling Ground for West Ham versus Man United. Final score was 3-2 West Ham. Adam, I don't know if you remember that one at all.
Yeah.
Did you enjoy that?
Feel good about that one?
No, that's all right.
That's all right.
We can give West Ham one though. I think they can get one every once in a while.
The first Hell is Real match, MLS match in Columbus, 2-2 draw, but it was an amazing match. He was at a bachelor party during it, so he watched it from a bar of TV in Columbus. That was an amazing game, too. The first meeting of SEC and the crew in the Open Cup, he's a crew fan. He said that sucked for him, but we can all attest that was a really good one. The final NASL match between Indy and the Cosmos was a 1-1 draw. He and his fiance were there for the game. Huge downpour for the second half, but just an amazing overall atmosphere. And then a 2017 match between Detroit City and the Dayton Dynamo. It was the first time he traveled as a supporter for a club. Apparently they do cool things up in Detroit. So thanks, Matt, for sharing those and your patience for getting those in. Rupesh, he just listed his out. USA-Mexico, the 2002 World Cup. That made my list as well. France-Brazil, the 98 World Cup final. I think that was on a lot of people's top 10 lists. FCC Chicago Fire, that definitely made mine too. He is a Liverpool fan. We'd see a Liverpool in contribution in here. Liverpool-Milan final in 2005. Pulling Istanbul. And then he also had another Liverpool match, Liverpool-Dortmund Europa League. Cup semifinal second leg. It was a lover and header. So anyway, thanks for everyone who contributed. And now let's get over to a top 10 list that we've been fanfaring all episode long. Goalkeepers. And I don't know. I feel like as a longtime soccer player, I feel educated enough to talk about most positions on the field. But I feel like an idiot sometimes when it comes to goalkeeping. Like, I feel like sometimes I want to be critical of a goalkeeper, and then I say something on Twitter, and then, like, out of the woodwork comes Adam Maloney, and he's like, well, hey, this is something you haven't thought about, you idiot non-goalkeeper. And I'm like, oh, yeah, you're right. I actually don't know what I'm talking about. So that's why we brought Adam back into the fold tonight, because I didn't want to have any picks on here where I look like a total idiot because I thought someone was good. So
we'll probably still have that though, right?
Definitely have one.
Well, good. If you have one, that means that I at least get a pass on one of mine. I don't know who wants to do the honors to get us started tonight, since it doesn't seem like anyone has any true ranking going on here. We're gonna list out some goalkeepers that we like.
All right, I say our guest should go first.
Okay.
Yeah, like you said, I don't have any. I didn't rank them. I just kind of went with who came into my head that I liked. It's funny too. Like, I think this happens in basketball a lot, where people feel like they have to put certain people on a list, even though maybe they never saw them play, or it was so long ago that, like, you'll see film and you go, what? This isn't even the same sport. Like,
Is this
tactics have evolved? The position itself has evolved. Like, this guy's not moving out of the six and he's supposed to be the best of all time. Like, it's not his fault. It's just how the game was played. But yeah, the first one I had was Tim Howard. It's 120 caps, 330 Everton appearances. And Manchester, when he went to Manchester United, he was one of the top keepers in the league immediately. And then he just kind of had a bad run of form, I guess. And then they signed Van der Sar. So that's going to be an issue regardless of who you are. But yeah, clear US legend, which it kind of takes me into Brad Friedel, and they've got sort of the same kind of career trajectory, like successful in the US, huge signing overseas, go to a marquee club and sort of fizzle out after a year, 2 years, 3 years. He never really got that Liverpool job. But then he goes and makes 300 appearances at Blackburn, and then goes to Villa and Spurs. And if he and Howard both seem to like kind of hit their stride, after they made that second transfer, like from the marquee club to the to the, like a middle of the table club, and then they became well respected, kind of thought of as world class goalkeepers. I think Howard probably is a little bit better than Friedel in my book. Friedel just kind of seemed like that 90s prototypical style, big, broad-shouldered goalkeeper. But like if you watch his film, he's not wowing you athletically and stuff. Like obviously the dude's athletic. He's a top flight goalkeeper, but his angles are never wrong, ever. Like he was a master at making the goal as small as possible. So a lot of people think of angles as like just being in the right space, left to right in the goal, but it's also left to right and calibrating front to back inside the box where you are. So you're kind of operating on two axes there. And he never gets it wrong.
Yeah, it's funny. Those were the two American goalkeepers that I had in my top 10 list. I don't know if anyone else had anyone, but I felt like they're head and shoulders above, even though like I feel like Casey Keller needs to come into the conversation, but I feel like Howard and Friedel were kind of the two standouts of the that kind of pack of three of the elites.
Yeah, they
were definitely both on my list as well. Yeah, I mean, the Howard accolades are easy to point out. I mean, just some of the more recent, you know, kind of recency bias, some of the more recent World Cups. You know, you think about the effort he put in there in 2014, even, you know, in the loss against Belgium. I think you can't go wrong with those two. I was trying to figure out, like, other U.S. men's national team keepers to put in. And without, like, being... Not like being like overly disingenuous. Like I'm sure there's people that probably want to put like a Miola on the list, but like for me, like he just didn't. I didn't see enough of him to go like, okay, yeah, that guy.
I wanted a Hanneman.
I do love Marcus.
A special mention for Hanneman for throwing the ball at the referee.
Yeah. Yep. That was literally the only reason I wanted him on my list here, if I'm being
honest. I wanted him on the list for the flavor taster that he rocked the entire time.
Who is the dude he played for Wolves and for a couple other teams that had the little goatee? There's an American keeper.
I think Hanneman was playing for Wolves when he threw the ball at the AR.
Yeah, that is who I'm thinking of here. Yeah, you're right.
It was against City.
So,
but if we're talking great goatees, great facial hair from keepers, it would be like what? Seaman? David Seaman?
Whoa.
I mean, Seaman's like 50% mustache and the other 50% is that ponytail. So,
I mean, it's pretty solid though.
Like, that was some serious fashion he was rocking.
Yeah, it's true. So we've got a couple American keepers that we can check off of our list. Jeremy, who's someone else that you've got that we've not mentioned to this point?
You know what? I think the only other American keeper you could throw on the list would be going on the other side of the equation with Hope Solo.
Yeah. Have to include Hope in the equation. I think she's probably the first, like, truly the first women's player that really wowed me from an athleticism standpoint, where I feel like you could throw her in goal in just about most of the games that I played in, and I wouldn't really feel like I would be at any real disadvantage. Not to mention that she was, I mean, her reactions were top notch, and she was so fiery. It would, could kind of be one of those keepers that kind of lead you from the back and sometimes the wrong ways, but she certainly could propel a game in a different direction with her character, which, you know, is a two directional type of thing, but a lot of times worked out for Hope during her career.
Yeah. She won some games for them. They've, they weren't blowing people out for a few years, and she was keeping them in games that they probably should have lost.
Yeah. And she knows it.
She definitely embodies the notion that like the keeper is kind of like the drummer of the band. You have to be a little crazy to take that role. And she had that in spades.
I mean, Adam knows this as well as anyone, and anyone who's been around the sport for a long time knows this. Goalkeepers are generally not like what you would consider like a run of the mill soccer player. Like they're not like, if you think of the average soccer player, I don't feel like goalkeepers fall into that like equation when you're calculating that average, because they're almost always an outlier in personality in some shape or form. And that sounds a negative, but it's not meant that way. They're just a different breed of player entirely.
Yeah. I think that's fair. And I think some people have a switch. They can turn it on when they step across the line to train or to play, and then they turn it off. But it seems like somebody like Hope Solo never really turned it off either.
Yeah.
The switch was always on.
A guy that I think both of you will know that I played with both in high school, remains a longtime friend. And Adam, we played with him in Dayton. Matt Hsu, he played Denison University, and he sent me a picture this week from a starting 11 picture where they're out for the national anthem, and the goalkeeper is turned away from the camera and is hunched over, and he was puking, very clearly puking. And Matt says, he goes, this kid did this every game before kicking, every single game, because he would just be so riled up before the game.
But like he would just psych himself up to the point where he would be throwing up.
Oh yeah, and I could name you 2 to 3 other goalkeepers that I know that have done this throughout the course of my careers that were puking before most games, and they're the only people I know that have done this. I've never known another player on the pitch to have done that aside from a goalkeeper.
That's it. You got to get off the field though, man. You can't throw off the field.
You'd hope. I couldn't tell from there, but I suddenly thought about the games where I played against that kid and really wondered if I'd stepped in any puke or worse. Move on to the list and move away from puking. I'm going to throw out a name that's going to be a little off the wall here. Definitely doesn't belong in anyone's list from his ability standpoint, but I love him. Jorge Campos, the Mexican goalkeeper. Legendary, you know, we talked about him on the Jersey podcast last week for his wild kits, the ones he created for himself. But what I loved about him is he is a terrible goalkeeper. Like he's truly terrible. His form is bad. He does things you should never, ever do. He'd go on long runs up the field that he had no business doing. But he was mega entertaining. I loved that he somehow became a forward that got sat in a goalkeeping situation and then never really left it and kind of made it his own thing.
The David Luiz of keepers.
Oh, man. That's
mind-boggling decisions.
Yeah, it is exactly like when you're a kid and your one goalkeeper gets hurt, so they have to just put the most athletic kid in. And he's making all kinds of saves that look terrible. Like, I guess that works. doesn't matter. Just keep the ball out of the net.
I mean, I saw him score a bicycle kick goal in an MLS All-Star game. Like, he just – what the hell was he doing? What was he doing? But he was out there doing his thing. And as crap as he was, he played his way into our hearts. And unfortunately, way too many U.S. men's national team losses. Who else you got, Adam?
If we're going with guys that don't belong on the list, I've got Fraser Forster.
Whoa.
For one reason only. What he did against Barcelona in 2012 in the Champions League. Celtic, 125th anniversary. The crowd is nuts. There's videos online. Check them out of that game. There's actually a fan shot video, a Barcelona fan shot a video, and I was like, this is the best thing I've ever seen. But yeah, man, like he was unreal. Actually, that Celtic team was pretty good. I know he's made a ton of mistakes after that, had sort of like a sniff with England, but never could really get over the hump. And it's not like they've got like a ton of goalkeepers. Like he couldn't beat out Joe Hart still, but, that one single performance earned him a spot on this list.
Yeah, I feared that match would come up. I know you and I have talked about that one before, online, at least on a few occasions. Definitely a good one. Jeremy, you got any weird outliers out there?
I think the only one, maybe two. MLS Ironman Nick Raimondo definitely is on my list. Also probably one of the shortest keepers to be as successful as he is. Not a tall dude, which is generally what you'd think of when you think of keepers.
Yeah, he's one of those weird little guys. You see him jumping around. It looks like I'm like Super Mario with like a little extra mushroom in him.
He's like John Bush.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just pawing stuff away. Like, how'd that little guy get up there?
Yeah.
And especially Raimondo's like squat too. Kind of looks like a little like a little butter bean jumping up in the air and swatting things away.
Yeah, like with Bush, you're like, okay, that guy moves like he should move. He's really athletic. He's visibly athletic.
Yeah.
Like Raimondo, you see it, and he is crazy athletic, and you don't expect it.
Right.
He looks like he almost has no neck. Like if I were drawing a caricature of him, it would just be like a face emerging from a set of shoulders. And like he just doesn't at all look like a human who's going to be out there making ridiculous saves. And he just always manages to get to things. That is a good selection that I wouldn't call it out there, but I felt like it's at least a good one. I have one other one. I don't know if anyone else will have this on this list. And I think this is more like his legend is as big as anything. But I grew up fascinated that he even existed. And it's Jose Luis Chilavert, the Paraguayan goalkeeper who took free kicks. He was a sniper. He could hit a hell of a free kick. But he was also considered, and there are other goalkeepers that are also out there that have done more. In fact, Rogério Ceri, the Brazilian goalkeeper who's the highest scoring goalkeeper of all time, was like scoring goals like 5 years ago, probably still in Brazil. But what I really liked about Chilavert is he was like truly one of the best goalkeepers in the world while he was hitting badass free kicks and penalties all the time for Paraguay, and played in Spain. He played in Germany. He's played all over the place. So I love Chilavert. I can watch goalkeepers hit free kicks all day long. It's like the coolest shit ever. It's things that happen in FIFA, but don't happen in real life. But Chilavert like is the reason why they let you hit free kicks with keepers in FIFA.
Yeah. And he's like actually doing it at a high level and is really good at it.
Yeah.
Like if anything within 40 yards, and they didn't only use him on like free kicks that would be shots on goal. Like he's serving balls into the box.
Oh yeah. He's taking like all their
free kicks. It's unreal. Yeah. He was left footed, right? Just whipping balls and left footed.
Yep.
That's why you like him.
Well, you know, you got to show love for my lefties. Jeremy, who else you got on your list?
Yeah, I think the rest are kind of what most people just consider like, you know, elite big name keepers. Unfortunately, had an amazing 2002 World Cup, much to our chagrin here in the U.S. But Oliver Kahn, that was probably one of the first times like in like the World Cup I saw like a keeper performance where I was like, crap, that guy is pretty good.
Yeah, Icon on my list too. He's another one of those guys that seems like a mythical presence. Like I think of him as like a bad guy from like a big boss at the end of a level of a video game that like there's just no way that you can beat him because he just seems too big and too intimidating. Adam, you said earlier like Friedel reminds you of that like big broad shoulder old school goalkeeper. Yeah. And like Khan for me is like not only does he have the name Khan, but like
And it's Oliver too. Like it's so everything about him is imposing.
Oh yeah.
Like, Khan.
Yeah, you can totally imagine him murdering you in Lost Crusaders or something along those lines, right? Like he's just huge, but I mean, truly a great goalkeeper as well. But he definitely falls on my list, and I just remember his myth as much as I remember anything.
Yeah, when I said that, Friedel reminded me of like that sort of style. That's who I was thinking of, like him and Schmeichel. Funnily enough, like he didn't make my list, but it's also because like I knew that I would never play that style. Like I was never drawn to him like stylistically because that's not what I was as a goalkeeper. I was never going to be 6'4" with 40-inch quads. Like that wasn't me, so I had to do something else.
Yeah. Fair enough. Well, who else did you have on your list then?
Buffon was my next one.
Yeah.
I would imagine he's on everybody's list.
Yep.
I mean, Juve legend, Italy legend, one of the best ones of all time. And if he kind of seemed like one of those first guys that sort of started transforming the position from like that Schmeichel Khan style to more of a we're going to use you as a soccer player. You're a soccer player that uses your hands instead of just a big physical goalkeeper. Cause he was really good with his feet. But contrary to them, he was like super athletic. So he could play outside of his box. He was really comfortable. Just flying off his line and it seemed like he could take more chances than them. And that was attractive to me. He was a big dude too. Like, I think people underestimate how big he is. He's like 6'4", but he's not built like those other guys. He's more athletic and he just moves better. Like it seemed to sort of modernize the position to me.
Yeah. No, I think the other thing that about Buffon that just always stands out is like, and he's still playing. I can't really think of a time where I've watched professional soccer regularly where he's not been in the equation. Like 20 years ago, he was still playing professionally.
Yeah.
He's like 105 years old, I think, now.
And at the same level, it's not like he ever just went to collect a check in some other country or something like that. Like he's played at a high level for two decades.
Yeah. Kind of insane. Jeremy, you got anything else for us?
Let's go. I don't know. A keeper I always like, but I know that I feel like I like him more than you, DJ. I've always been a huge Hugo Lloris fan. I don't know why. I just have always liked him. You seem to not even like him as much as I do, or at least rate him as highly as I do. But yeah, he's definitely one I put on my list.
Yeah, don't get me wrong. I like Hugo. He's the best goalkeeper we've had at Spurs while I've been watching them. My respects to Paul Robinson. But I don't know. R.I.P. almost. But at the same time, I don't know, just he's always so prone to make a huge mistake. Something you'd said about Buffon, he had the license to try some things that other people wouldn't. And Lloris is like almost there. Like he's almost at that level, but in a way that Buffon wouldn't really let you down, Larice is guaranteed a couple times a season in those really critical moments where he's trying something intense, where he just craps the bed and like he gives up a goal as a result of it. And you just never can really get over those times where he just stabs you in the back by trying something that if he'd just done the easy thing, then he wouldn't have been in that situation.
And they always seem mental, right? Like it's never just he mishandles a ball or something. It's he comes out for a ball that he's got no chance to get, and the goal's wide open. And somebody nods a header, and like it's something that is just mind-boggling. Like you're gonna make physical mistakes, but these mistakes that he's doing, like maybe he tries to dribble somebody out of the back. Like what are you doing, man?
Yeah. Yeah, it always catches me off. So, Jeremy, that's a terrible pick, even though it's the goalkeeper.
I mean, in a lot of ways, I like the fact that he makes mistakes as well.
You like that because he's not your goalkeeper. It's a lot easier. It's endearing.
It kind of – it's in that same style as a Buffon, though. Like, they're playing the position the same way.
Yeah, I'll throw out a name that – falls right in that kind of same set and kind of he shows that same propensity to be a little boneheaded, although maybe at a slightly higher level than Maurice. Manuel Neuer, I like him as much because he's crazy as anything else. Like Lloris will come out and you're like, oh wow, that's kind of far, and then you'll see Neuer come out and he'll be out like past midfield, like, and you'll be like, what the hell is that guy doing there? And most of the time he gets it right, like 95% of the time he gets it right. But every once in a while he doesn't, and it always ends up being comedy. And I find it more endearing because it's not my goalkeeper, not my team that I'm seeing getting stung. But Neuer also has some incredible abilities outside of his ability to read the pitch and find himself outside of his own box.
Yeah, I think he's one of that I kind of struggled with. I didn't put him on the list. I went back and forth on it. Fantastic with his feet. And I think maybe I didn't put him on just out of spite because people are so quick to just say, Neuer, best in the world. Neuer's best in the world. Like, how much German soccer do you watch and how much do you watch of other leagues? Like, we're probably watching more than a lot of people that just want to say Neuer's the best in the world. So maybe I didn't put him on just for those people. But yeah, he is prone to just a, what are you doing? But that's the nature of playing the position that way. Like, yeah, Schmeichel's not going to do that, but he's also not giving you what Neuer is giving you with his feet in Buffon. So like maybe you're giving up goals that aren't his fault, but would you have given up goals a different way if you weren't using your keeper as an outlet? So I mean there's not really a way to tell that, but there's an opportunity cost of playing those two different styles.
Yeah, absolutely. One guy that I have on my list that I don't know if anyone else would have on there, I would say it's kind of a new gen goalkeeper. I felt like we needed some younger blood in this mix, but definitely in the same vein. And I think this is, you know, we talked about Neuer, Buffon, you know, these guys who can play with their feet, even Lloris as well. And I feel like he's kind of the guy who's taking it to the next level, and that's Alisson Becker. If there was like any goalkeeper in the world that I could pick for my team right now, I feel like Alisson would probably be it. There's a reason why Liverpool paid out the nose for him. And I find that he's well-rounded and he can give you all those opportunities that maybe a more traditional goalkeeper probably can't. With his ability to hit an outlet, I feel like he's good at distribution in a way that a lot of other goalkeepers probably aren't too.
That's kind of a last 4 or 5 year thing that's gotten really popular. Jordan Pickford's really good at it. Alisson's really good at it. It's hitting that side volley with either foot on an absolute laser 60, 70 yards that just springs an outlet like no other form of distribution can. Like a throw can't get there. A punt's not going to get there. Putting the ball down at your feet, that takes too long. Like these guys are catching balls, turning and hitting bombs on a line. That's something you didn't see even 6-7 years ago. I mean, you did every once in a while, but these guys are training it. And you're going to see a lot more guys doing that.
Yeah, it is certainly – as someone who loves a counterattack, I do love how he can just spring him forward.
Yeah. Yeah, it's impressive.
Jeremy, what else you got?
I got to go with it. Petr Cech, probably one of the best to ever play in the Premier League. I don't and yet also do say that as a Chelsea fan.
Okay.
Pre or post headgear?
Preference. Trying to think, it's split. He won two titles with, two without. So
fair enough. That's fair.
There's things to like about pre and post helmet check. Adam, do you got any good ones we've not listed off yet?
Yeah, a few. If we're staying in the Premier League, I got to go with De Gea.
Homer.
Well, I mean, he's kept United above water since Alex Ferguson left. Like, best player in the club, without a doubt. And he's improved too. He was bad in the air and with decision making on crosses when he first came in the league. Like, clearly talented, unbelievably athletic, but then now he's dominating balls in the air, and he maybe more than any goalkeeper in the last 5 years. Like, when someone hits a shot that it's going in. I've never been surprised more by another keeper recently than De Gea. Like, he's pulling off shots that I'm sure are going in. Like, tipping him around the post or tipping him over the bar, like balls he has no business saving.
Yeah, I feel like he does pull some truly mind-boggling athletic saves out, and they are like always weird full stretch ones or like these crazy like whip reactions. Like it's always involves a lightning quick decision that you just don't feel like anyone should be fast enough to make that type of save with.
Yeah.
But I feel like he's kind of hit like a bit of a downturn a little bit too over the last year.
I agree. Or maybe a plateau.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's funny, you mentioned his reaction. Like he was getting criticized, earlier in his career. Like, why is he saving so many balls with his feet? Because other guys aren't making those saves. They're just giving up goals.
Yeah.
Because he can move his feet faster than everybody else.
Yeah, like I don't understand why this is a problem.
Yeah.
That seems like what he's paid to do back there. I'm going to go with another Spaniard here as well, one who I kind of feel is almost genre-defining as well, but in a different light, and that's Iker Casillas. Definitely a player who could play with his feet. But I mean, he was a guy that was thrust into the spotlight as a 16-year-old and never really let go of it. I mean, he's still playing as well. He's been in Portugal, although I think he was just forced to retire due to heart condition issues. But I mean, Casillas is just—he was at the top of the game and has lifted literally every trophy imaginable. As one of the best keepers, one of the best sides of all time. And he was able to play in that tiki-taka style, in addition to his ability to making, I feel like he's one of the preeminent reaction save goalkeepers. Like, when I think of people that make saves that don't seem possible, Casillas seems like the guy who kind of defined that genre.
Yeah. And I think that stems from his ability to read the game, because he's not a big dude. Most of these other guys are 6'4", 6'5". Casillas is 6 foot, 6'1", which I think I had him and Buffon kind of at the top of my list. I know I said I didn't rank them, but they're both probably equal number ones to me. But I always lean toward Casillas because if I wanted to play like him, like that's who I wanted to play like. Yeah, man, like right away, Champions League final at 19 years old for Real Madrid. Like it wasn't some young, like Porto finds this young keeper and he carries him to the fight. It's Real Madrid at 19 years old. And then 2 years later, he comes off the bench in the final and saves the game for Madrid in 2002. But yeah, his ability to read the game and his quick reactions are kind of it's just how I wanted to play, and it's the keeper on this list that looks the most like me, I guess.
I can see the resemblance just a little bit.
It's there. I definitely see it.
Yeah. Jeremy, you got any more fun ones?
You know what? I think all of them have been crossed off my list, either mentioned by me or one of you guys. I think I'm actually tapped out.
Oh, man. Adam, any others on your list that we've not hit yet?
I've got two more.
All right.
I've got a Van der Sar. You can call me Homer again. But he... To me, he's kind of in that same vein as De Gea, like a big, sleek, slender, super athletic Manchester United goalkeeper. But being comfortable with feet, like he could play in that style too. He could still play now in this era of using goalkeepers as a soccer player, because he's hitting 60-yard balls to with either foot to any part of the field.
I mean, it's part of the Dutch game.
Yeah, right. Great at penalties.
Yeah, that's true. He was great at penalties. Now, it's hard to call too many people homers with Manchester United's goalkeeper selection over the years. You guys have had quite a few. I had to throw him on here. Adam, you've dropped his name in a couple times. But Peter Schmeichel, I feel like he was the preeminent goalkeeper when I was a kid. Not just with Manchester United. Everyone will think of the treble winning season and, you know, how great he was with penalties as well. But I think one of the tournaments that really defines him for me was when he lifted the European Cup with Denmark. I mean, he was just lights out in that tournament. Denmark barely like gave up any goals at all in that tournament, the entirety of that tournament. So he literally, like when I first learned about club or European football, like Peter Schmeichel was like the goalkeeper, and I don't really, I mean, he is that old school big body goalkeeper, and you know, his son is kind of like this weird hybrid between that and a more traditional goalkeeper in today's standards. But he's like, when I think of a goalkeeper, like I kind of think of Schmeichel.
Yeah, I think he's probably got to be on the list. The last one that I had, I threw Dida on there. Just because in the early 2000s, he looked like the best goalkeeper in the world. And I think getting hit by a flare at Inter, like, I think that messed him up.
Yeah. Like
it was unbelievable that a guy that big and like that physically imposing could move as well as he moved. Like it almost didn't make sense. Like he's built like a power forward almost, but he's making these unbelievable reaction saves that you just don't expect from a guy that looks like he looks.
Yeah. That.
But yeah, what that 2002 to 2005 or whatever. Like he was at the top of the world.
Yeah, you forget about that flare incident, and you know, actually, kind of when hooliganism kind of peaked its head back up and started making itself known again in European soccer circles. And Dida was really one of those that kind of took it literally on the chin. And he never did really recover from that. In fact, it almost became comically bad at the end of his career.
Yeah.
And it did seem a lot of times like he was second guessing himself, and you never really think about like, oh, was he looking over his shoulder to see if another, you know, flaming object was heading his direction. But those are the kind of things that happen.
Yeah. And with goalkeepers, especially, confidence is everything. And if that's gone, you can't do anything without second guessing yourself. You can't take a step. You're second guessing your angles now. Should I come for this ball? Should I not? And then it's too late, regardless of what decision you make. It's you can't do that, and you have to be confident. And if you don't have it, and he clearly didn't after that, then you're not going to be good.
Yeah. Well, definitely an inclusion that I don't think many people would have on their top 10 list, but definitely one that we're happy to hear. But I think that means we've now exhausted all of our top 10 lists. So, Adam, thank you very much for contributing your thoughts on it. You didn't say that any of our picks were bad, outside of we both agreed that Lurie shouldn't have been in there. So,
it's happening, guys. Let it happen.
You're the one that disagreed.
Oh, man, I'm always getting pinned with
your guy.
Yeah. Jeremy, great pick. That was a great pick.
Ah, dang.
I do have a question for you. Like, we talked, I think, going through this entire list, I think we've only mentioned, like, one guy that's, like, currently in his prime in Alisson. Would you say that he is the best keeper in the world at the moment? And if not, who?
Oh, man.
No one got to see this. We got to see this since we're on camera, but Adam just gave a really long head rub and one where you can tell that he's straining his brain.
Yeah, there's wrinkles on my forehead now.
Yeah.
I don't know. Best is tough, regardless of what it is. But yeah, for the sake of this conversation, I would probably say yeah. I would put him at the top of it, just because.
Is there anyone else you put up there with him?
What's that?
Is there anyone else, like, who else would you kind of put up there as kind of that, like, top tier currently in the prime keepers?
I think I'd still have De Gea up there. Man. But I think Alisson would have the edge, just because he's doing things that nobody else is doing. So other people will do those things, but it's always, now everybody has to play catch up with somebody that's been doing them better for longer. So like sort of like that transition from like the Schmeichels and Kahns to the more athletic kind of total footballing goalkeeper. He seems to be taking that to a different level that anybody else in the world is right now.
Yeah, I was thinking long and hard about who else I would even put in his category right now. And I think there are two that spring to mind. If you're staying within the Premier League ranks, I think Ederson is kind of – he's near it. I don't think he's quite at the same level or consistency.
I don't either. And it's the same style, but he's prone to some absolute howlers.
Yeah, and he's had a few for sure.
Yeah.
Not that Allison's not been caught with his pants down a few times too, but at the same time, and then Ter Stegen seems like another one that has the ability to be in the same conversation, but again, doesn't seem to do it as consistently or as at a high of a level as what Allison's doing right now.
Yeah, I think you nailed it.
Well. Well, there are goalkeeper picks. Of course, if you have different ones than us, you should let us know about them. Adams, if you want to share your Twitter handle, if anyone wants to follow you.
It's Maloney AM34.
All right. So Maloney AM34, let him know what you think about his goalkeeping picks or any of his other hot picks on Xavier or UD basketball, should that ever resume. Jeremy's at Jeremy Lance on Twitter, like normal. Yell at him. He's looking to get into Twitter fights right now, if nothing else.
I got nothing but time, people.
Yeah, bring it. I'm at Wrong Side of Pond as normal. Thanks again to our esteemed guest, Adam Maloney, for joining us. Not having to fill in. He's playing the part of a third party tonight. So it's good to get he and Jeremy on a show together instead of, you know, alternating spots.
Yeah, glad you could be here this time, Jeremy.
Yeah, I'm glad I'm also not in the hospital, so.
Yeah, take that, COVID. Well, thanks as always for listening, and we'll catch you guys next time.
Bye.